Welcome, everybody, and welcome Anthony Rudolph, who will be introducing everybody.
I'm here not because of any of those things I may or may not have done or been, but because in the capacity of bringing together, I'm really proud of having arranged the marriage between Charlotte Hodes and Derrin Rees-Jones. But with the process, we'll come on to that later, about the what has emerged from the life and work of one of the great poets who died in World War I and his amazing wife. They triggered, if you'll forgive the military metaphor, they triggered a beautiful poem, a deeply personal essay which accompanies the poem in the book, these wonderful collages by Charlotte Hodes, which you can see later, some of them, and the preparatory drawings in the glass case, and a magical, wondrous film, animated film, which made by Tina Bulyakova, and which Juliet Stevenson will read along with, if that's the technical term. Just a brief introduction of the participants. Derrin Rees-Jones, poet and scholar, professor and critic, professor of literature at Liverpool. Charlotte Hodes, painter and ceramicist, professor of fine art at London College of Fashion. Tina Bulyakova, up-and-coming artist and animator. Juliet Stevenson, I'll name only one film, because it is so, it could not be more relevant, perhaps you can guess already, to today's event. Truly, madly, deeply. If there ever was a phrase which was appropriate to explain, or not explain, but to describe this great poet and his wife and his companion, his partner, then that is it. This is a story of war and peace, death and loss, love and sex, town and country, art and life. It's got everything. When we say art and life, that sometimes one can over-separate, because a poem is part of life, and it feeds back. How many times would Helen have read the poem And You, Helen, which gives its title? So it's not just a recording of an event in his life or his being, his soul. It participates in the rest of their lives. Sadly for him, only perhaps just under a year later, he was killed. And now I'll hand over to Derrin. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you, Tony, for introducing that so beautifully. I won't say very much, but I will say that what I wanted to do in writing this was to have a conversation with Edward Thomas and his poem. It was a series of gift poems that he wrote for his family. I think very certain that he was going to die in the war. And You, Helen, is a very complex, brilliant poem, but I had issues with it, and I wanted to think very much about what it was like to be his wife, because when I was reading Helen Thomas's memoirs, which are full of love for her husband, they do not escape the huge difficulty of living with somebody who was very creative, but also, I think, sometimes very ill and depressed. And she is very, very thoughtful about her role in his life. And what made me stop so often was that I couldn't quite understand this balance that she had between adoring him and wanting to further everything he did as a creative person, but that she also managed to hold on to a sense of herself. And the word that keeps coming back for me is this idea of endurance. How much she endured, and how much capacity really she had for joy as she suffered hugely. They lived in great poverty, and she held the family together. And In the poem, I think if you listen carefully, I constructed it quite musically, I think. There are 12 sections, and there are words and fragments that keep coming back. This idea of her holding herself together, holding the family together, but also following a thread and unravelling a thread. And I think if you think about unravelling a thread, you're pulling apart memories and parts of yourself, but you're also giving yourself a line, and it's that line that she holds onto and follows through. In those sections, I have drawn on some biographical instances from her memoirs, her two memoirs, As It Was and World Without End, which she wrote in the 1920s. One of the incidents is this beautiful account she gives of making love to Edward for the first time on Wimbledon Common. And it's very poetic, and there are all sorts of wildflowers and birds. And one of the things that she felt that Edward had given her was this totally new way of seeing the world. And the irony for her was that she was incredibly short-sighted. And Edward gave her a way of knowing and telling which transformed her life, really. And I wanted to find some of that in here, about the way in which she finds words for feelings and that she starts to know things through things in nature. They give a kind of form to her feeling. And I suppose the three incidents that are accounted are the time she makes love with him on Wimbledon Common, the time when he decides he's going to kill himself and he steps out away from the children and takes a gun, and they just have to wait, and they wait all day, and then he comes home and she gives him his dinner and she goes to bed, and he's left sitting there clearly having made the decision not to die. And then the last time, which is very beautiful account of their last Christmas together, when suddenly a check appears and she can go out and she can buy food and she can buy presents for the children, and she buys herself this beautiful red dress, and he comes back in his great coat, his army coat, and takes off her clothes before the fire and wraps her in his coat and carries her up the stairs to bed, and they spend all night talking about the life that they've had and their children, really knowing, I think, that Edward might not come back from the war this time. I think that's all I'll say. Thank you.
And you, Helen. And you, Helen, what should I give you? So many things I would give you had I an infinite great store offered me and I stood before to choose. I would give you youth, all kinds of loveliness and truth, a clear eye as good as mine, lands, waters, flowers, wine, as many children as your heart might wish for, a far better art than mine can be, all you have lost upon the travelling waters tossed or given to me. If I could choose freely in that great treasure house anything from any shelf, I would give you back yourself and power to discriminate what you want, and want it not too late. Many fair days free from care, and heart to enjoy both foul and fair, and myself too, if I could find where it lay hidden, and it proved kind.
Can the loose strife make us a home? Can the skylark stuttering, sing and be known to us? Can the bee, creaturely dodging the breeze? Can the dragonfly, with her wings of glass? Can the bitter leaf and sweet grasses, grass seeds, meadow sweet and chickweed? Can the ants and woodlice, wind-blown burrs? Can the spider, assembling herself, pull threads of silver one to another? Can celandine, catkins, an orchard bound in mistletoe? Can the moth alert at our edges? Can a butterfly, rising and gliding in the powdery nettle beds? Can the shadow of the oak tree, casting itself from green to black? Even as the sky darkens, can the hare, stilled at the field's edge, nervy, watching, bring us an answer? I answer yes. And love hunkers down, shows us her great mercy. At first, she sees nothing. Darkness rubs at her. Star blasted, dream filled, knocking her sideways from love, out of sleep. None of this knows itself. Slow, forming. Now it is morning, and so there's a shift when dark is an opening, a heartbeat on darkness. Pulse, pulse. This is her mind, connecting with feeling, with thought. With a memory. Memory of thought. Loose strife. Nettles. She fumbles in spaces. Can sense in the half-light the breath of her children. Her body takes root. Her body takes hold. Roses blacken in a jug at the bedside. Ash in the grate remembers its fire. Now it is morning, yet still there is nothing, nothing but a space beside her, nothing but a space inside. The oak tree knows the field, the bend of its shadow to the grass. It knows the sun's path, passage of blackcap, starling, rook, how to clutch a song and nest it in leaf. It knows the ant that labours up grass blades, stag beetle glinting, passage of worms. The tree surrenders its shadow to shadows. Oak tree and field converse in the shadow grass. Here is how shadows bend, here is where birds rise. Birds rise. Had the night known its own self, darkness, it would have opened wide its mouth, afraid. Two men walk across the field. Her heart's beat like a missed step. August wears ghost selves, and the shadow of one keeps on walking into shadow, while the shadow of one lies down. Pause. Moth flutter like shadow broken loose, carving grey in the moonlight. First you hear rain, then you imagine it, seeing how rain might drum at its brokenness, drums inside. A man feels the dark field singing through his bones. She feels it too, rain singing, love singing, here. Now are its broken lines, here in a heartbeat, the white explosion. A body lies thickening with mud, and the dead who are long gone open up their mouths. The rain, the field, every small thing it owns. Where he is, stumbles. Although she can imagine him, lovingly pulls a thread. His voice. Silence breaks in the listening, widens, stretches. A hair quivers like an unearthed wire. Hush. While the field moves, she's complete in her listening. Rain on the roof makes eaves a dull listening. Then thunder dulls and the sky splits. She's dreaming of journeys and trains through the darkness. Elder, dogwood, flaming maple. Pulls at a thread. As this old tin bowl holds water for washing, it holds to the memory of water. As her body holds the memory of, she holds to. As a gun holds a memory of its firing, as the earth soaks up water, sends it skyward, as the skylark, as the fieldfare, sparrow, blackcap, rook, as her body holds his body, as their slow, deep movements, he holds too. As milk burns in the breast, remembering the tug of, as their bodies are a bridge, and children call to her out of their sleep, as her collarbone, as her pelvic bone, as her everything holds. As the horses, as she wakes from a dream, as shrapnel, as mud. Where she is, stumbles. Her fingers move to the edges of her body, negotiate the space at her clavicle. She holds the full weight of her breast in her hands. She cannot feel much more than this. When she wakes, she reaches for the space. Is it always like this? Each step, as if each bare foot on the wooden stairs might suddenly explode. So field edge touches sky edge. So a pair of sparrows squabble in the corn stooks. Somewhere, between the greying field and the dusk dark, between grass song, her whisperings, and tree song, the talking of the leaves, a body hangs in a moment. Here is the moment between living and dying, the space beyond and the space inside. She stretches out her limbs and there is a conversation taking place. The space beyond the space inside. Does the breeze pull a thread of hair across a brow? Does the movement of the blood around the body, stoppered by the earth's stop, run to a halt? Do the lungs expand after death to this? And is silence its own sound? Does she wait now for an exhalation? Does a wheeze of breath come at the very end, overdue? Does a wren caught beneath a hedgerow suddenly appear? Fieldfare, sparrow, rook. There's blood at the throat. Whose throat? His body is perfect. Only his heart stopped, as if caught in the split of a second, catching its breath. He gives her a look. Pause. The skies light up. Is this the way she might imagine him? Poems feather in his pocket. Birdsong. Here is the stillness of Robin or Redstart called palely to his palm. The memory of a memory, that last night returns to her, fragments melting in the nudges of firelight. His hand that touches, without somehow touching, any human part of her. It is like this, this slow, gorgeous climbing and gathering, this entering, this being inside. White clover, yellow bedstraw, milkwort. She drops a glass, and now her face, as if something at her heart had spilled. Or the crack, singing like an ice floe in darkness, widens, holds. What she holds for their children. But now there is breakage, the terrible shifting ocean of herself let out. Blue strife, metals. She'd unbuttoned her blouse, letting her clothes fall loose to the waist, then pool in a circle, shoulder straps, underclothes. She makes his body, as she guides his hands, a poem. The sun a covering, the sky a covering, their two bodies in one movement, a poem in the grass. She remembers the day he turned tight on his heel, took a gun in his hand to walk out to the woods. The children's eyes blackened like wounds in the darkness, and her own heart split. She wonders at the fury of endurance. Where to place love? Sinew, curve, edge, vein. Love cooks, digs, sews, binds, smooths, irons, cleans, wrenching from tiredness, dirt, a tenderness. When they lie together in the night, it is something like this. Pulse. Rain furies, dances, sings. If he sees the world through her eyes, then she sees the world through his. He has gathered her up in his old greatcoat. Can he carry her, she wonders, like the girl she was, in his officer's coat with his freshly razored hair? Mosses grow on the furzy green. Her red dress tears like a wound, inner wound. He has gathered her up and will sing to her under the shadow of the deep-breasted oak. Listen, this is the sound of his tread on the stairs. He has gathered her up. My arm in yours, my hand in your pocket. You must walk, he laughs with her hand in his pocket. As if in your dreams. And the dead who are long gone open up their mouths. Let us open up our lips. Let us show forth our... Star-blasted, dream-filled. White clover, yellow bedstraw, milkwort. She opens her mouth to a dark field. She opens her mouth to a thousand leaves. The oak tree knows the field. She walks now in its shadow. Nettles, meadow grass. All now that has travelled between them. Sweat, semen, blood, milk, tears. Leaf shadow touches grass shadow. A child mutters in the breakages of sleep. First you hear rain. Then you imagine it. She dances with him. Leaf shadow touches grass shadow. And you, Helen? She begins. When I walk with the white shock of an explosion. When I love, when I walk with their clean, white bones.
Thank you.